It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
You live in a money pit.
Money pit.
If your basement needs a pump or your place looks like a dump, you live in a money pit.
Money pit.
Pick up the telephone, fix up your home sweet home by calling 888 Money Pit.
The Money Pit is presented by Quikrete Advanced Polymer Sealants and Home Advisor. Now here are Tom and Leslie.
Coast to coast and floorboards to shingles, this is the Money Pit Home Improvement Show. I'm Tom Kreitler.
And I'm Leslie Segretti.
And welcome to the fall fix-up season. It is officially the Goldilocks season. It's not too hot, it's not too cold, so no excuses for projects inside or outside your house. If you don't know where to start, start with us. Call us right now with your home improvement questions at 1-888-MONEYPIT. Coming up on today's episode, if you find that your cakes are salty and your meatloaf is sweet, well, what you might be lacking is not cooking skills, but the right lighting in your kitchen. We're going to share tips for the best task lighting just ahead.
And with U.S. home prices still rising, it can be tempting to look for a good deal by buying a home that's been foreclosed. But is it really? We're going to share the pros and cons in just a bit.
And if you'd like your home to be more energy efficient, one of the first things you need to do is stop wasting the energy you already have. Insulation is the key to doing just that, so we'll share some tips.
But first, we want to hear from you. What are you working on this fall season? How are you getting ready? Are you thinking about decorating for Halloween? Because I am. Maybe we can help you with that. Are you already dreaming about the holidays? Because I am. So let us give you a hand. Give us a call anytime at 888-MONEYPIT.
888-666-3974.
Ron in Pennsylvania, you've got the Money Pit. What can we do for you today?
Have an 1865 farmhouse that is in very good condition with about 2 foot thick stone walls that are the basement walls. And from what I understand, those old stone walls are made basically of stone, and sometimes they put rubble in the middle. Somehow field mice have found their way through from the outside, and I'm trying to figure out how to maybe barge or put cement in between the stones to protect that from happening.
So the mice, you think, are coming right through the foundation wall?
Oh, yeah. They're finding their way through. It's been 150 years.
Why can't you point the openings up? You know, by pointing, I mean, add mortar to those cracks or those crevices in the foundation wall to try to seal those gaps up.
My biggest question, I guess, is how do I get the part cleaned out so that I can point that up? I guess I should use air rather than water to try to blast it out to get the dust out of there so that the moisture, so that the whatever cement I use will adhere. Would you recommend water or air to try to clean that?
I think you could probably do it with a pressure washer, but you're just going to have to make sure it dries really well, you know, before you go ahead and point it up.
Is there any particular type of concrete product you would recommend or cement you would recommend for that?
I would take a look at the products that are made by Quikrete, Quikrete, and you can find a mortar patching compound that Quikrete makes and use that. Because it usually has a sort of a stickier component to it, so it's easier to press it in those places. But listen, I mean, aside from, you know, just sealing up those gaps, just keep in mind that there's a lot of different places that mice can get into your house. It might not just be those gaps in the foundation. I mean, they only need the space of about the width of a nickel to squeeze through.
It's amazing, pretty amazing how easily they can get in. We don't have a lot of trouble with them now as we did a little bit earlier, but I'd like to try to make those walls nicer again. They had the old horsehair blaster.
Yeah, well, of course, and that will you know, basically handle both of those challenges. I mean, generally, you want to avoid doing anything around your house that could be a nesting site, so that could be stacks of firewood or newspapers or things like that. You want to make sure you're careful with food in the house, especially pet food or types of food products that you keep, like, on the ground where it's accessible. You know, you want to make sure those things are in sealed containers. You want to look for all those gaps. If you find any little gaps like that, another little trick of the trade just temporarily is just to put steel wool in there, because mice can't get through steel wool. And then you want to use rodenticides. You know, you want to be careful if you have pets. If you do, there are bait stations that the bait can be held by that pets can't get into. But, you know, keeping those in and around the interior perimeter of the home, especially if it's up on a basement or a crawl space, are effective as well.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Good luck with that project, Ron. Thanks so much for calling us at 888-MONEY-PIT.
Cheryl's on the line with a decking question. How can we help you today?
I'm wanting to have a deck built at the back of my home, and I have a concrete pad outside the door. And when I asked someone to come and look at it and give me an estimate about a deck, they were wanting to put the supports right on this concrete pad that's back here, but it's all broken up and all uneven from a large, very large maple tree that I have in the back. And the roots they're gnarly, and a lot of them are near the surface. And so I was wondering if it would even be, you even recommend that I even think of having a deck built back there with the tree roots in the situation I have.
So first of all, if this is a patio, so it's a thin concrete slab, maybe 4 or 5 inches thick. Is that what you're telling me you have?
Right.
Okay. So
right.
That is not an appropriate foundation for a deck. And so anyone suggesting that it is would scare me, because in your part of the country, you need to have the footings for that deck be below the frost line. So that means that those footings have to be about 3 feet in the ground, and then on top of those footings you can build the deck. Otherwise the deck's going to ride up and down as the land freezes in the winter time. So what I would do is I would break up that patio and take it out of there. If it's already, you know, half broken up, I mean, with a jackhammer you'd probably get that thing out of there in an hour or two. It actually will come out a lot faster than what you would imagine. In terms of the tree roots, yeah, if you can get some of that out of there, it's probably not a bad idea. But clearly what you have to concentrate on is however you're going to support this deck. If it's pretty much a grade level deck, you know, you have to kind of put that beam in flush with the rest of the floor structure. If it's going to be up a little bit, then you would basically put the beam underneath the floor joist and support it on however many columns it takes to make it compliant with building code. But to do it right, it's got to be on a foundation. So don't just slap a deck structure over that patio. It's just not going to be built correctly, and I doubt it would pass building code, and it would also could devalue your house in the event you tried to sell it in the future.
Okay. Well, the contractor that I had out here, he was leery of, you know, he didn't want to disturb the tree roots too much for fear of killing this gigantic tree. And that was his...
Well, it wasn't a solution, because the roots are going to be there with or without the patio. It's not a solution. And he's not going to disturb the tree roots that much. Yes, it'll be hard to dig those holes. And you may have to chop through some of them, but I don't think just digging, you know, 3 or 4 holes for a footing is going to be enough to kill a tree.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad that I gave you a call then. Thank you so much.
All right, Cheryl. Well, good luck. Thanks so much for calling us at 888-MONEY-PIT.
Lauren, South Dakota's on the line with a leaky basement. What's going on?
Oh, thanks for taking my call. We live in a lovely vintage home, but we have for 25 years, and we want to be here another 25 years. But we have this problem about, you know, we're in western South Dakota. About every 3, maybe 4 years, it rains a lot in June. It's always in June, and it's generally 3 to 4 days of continuous rain. And what happens is water begins seeping into our basement. And it's only happened maybe 3 to 5 times in the 25 years we've lived here. However, we don't know how to fix this. We've had contractors come in who won't even respond and give us a recommendation. We really don't know what to do, and, you know, hoping you can give us some advice.
So it's a really, really simple project to do.
and a simple problem to fix. And the reason it is because you've explained to me that this water problem is caused by severe rain. And whenever you have a basement water or a crawl space water problem that's tied into rainfall or snowmelt, the solution is always to fix the drainage at the foundation perimeter. And there's two ways to do that. The first thing you need to do is to look at the gutter system. You need to make sure you have a gutter system, that it's big enough to handle all the water that's coming off the roof. You need one downspout for every 600 to 800 square feet of roof surface. And if you stand back and try to kind of estimate that in your head, you know, you can get a pretty good idea if it's enough. And also, if you go out in a severe thunderstorm or something, and we don't want you to get hurt, but if you see the gutters overflowing, you know that they're either clogged or they're just not big enough. But that water's got to be managed. It comes off that roof. When it goes down the downspout, that downspout's got to be extended at least 4 to 6 feet from the foundation. A lot of times, we'll find that those downspouts are jumping right at the corner of the foundation, and it just jumps right back into the basement. So get the roof water under control first. That's the biggest cause of wet basements right there, and the easiest to fix.
Oh, is it? Okay. So is it possible to like add spouts like to your gutter system? Or
yes. And sometimes you have to do that. Sometimes you can add a wider spout. Instead of having a 4-inch downspout, you can have a 6-inch downspout connected to the old gutter system. But you need to make sure you've got the downspouts, you've got the gutters, and they're flowing properly, and that discharge is well away from the foundation perimeter. Most installers will turn it out about 12 inches at the bottom and put a splash block there, but that's just not enough. You've got to move that water well away from the house. And then the second thing is to look at the grading, the angle of the soil at the foundation perimeter, and make sure it's sloping away from the house. It should drop about 4 inches or 6 inches over 4 feet. And if it's flat or if it's tilted back into the house or if the grade is made up of a lot of mulch or a lot of stone or you've got like a brick scalloped edge that's holding water against the house, you basically want any water that lands in that first 4 feet of the foundation perimeter to run away from it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. So we would have then that found it graded away from the foundation. Okay. Because we do have some stone here and there and, you know, we haven't changed the gardens a lot, you know, since we've been here, but that really is, so there's nothing to seal like in the basement, or we don't need to worry about that?
Nope. There's nothing. There's absolutely nothing to seal. No, what you basically want to do is exactly what we said. You want to keep the water away. Believe me, it is that easy. In fact, if you go to moneypit.com, you will find on the homepage an article about how to fix a leaky basement. And the reason it's on our homepage is because in the 16-year history of the Money Pit, it's the most popular article we've ever written. It's had hundreds of thousands of views and lots of comments. And it's had that kind of traffic because it works. And it's surprisingly easy to fix.
Oh, well, thanks a lot. Gosh, that's great because I had these visions of trying to add sump pumps and this and that. And then I was really concerned because the contractors wouldn't even get back to us that we'd called.
Yeah, not necessary.
Okay, well, thanks so much. And I really love your show. I listen every weekend when it's out here. So,
so glad you do. Thanks so much for calling us at 888-MONEY-PIT.
Did you know that Americans take 20,000 breaths a day and spend an average of 90% of their time indoors?
That's right. And according to the EPA, the level of indoor air pollutants can be 2 to 5 times higher than outdoor air and occasionally more than 100 times higher. Plus, every spring we get socked with allergens too. Well, Air Doctor is an air purifier that filters out dangerous contaminants like pollen, pet dander, dust mites, and mold. Their Ultra HEPA filter has been independently tested to remove 99.99% of tested allergens, including bacteria and viruses.
That's impressive. Now, Air Doctor also comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so if you don't love it, just send it back for a refund minus the shipping.
And they're offering a special discount to Money Pit listeners. Just head to airdoctorpro.com and use promo code MONEYPIT, and you'll receive up to $300 off air purifiers. Exclusive to podcast customers, you'll also receive a free 3-year warranty on any unit, which is an additional $84 value. Lock this special offer in right now by going to airdoctorpro.com and use promo code MONEYPIT. That's airdoctorpro.com, promo code MONEYPIT.
Everyone should know that drinking water is important to staying hydrated and healthy. Having safe, clean water is the last thing you want to worry about, but unfortunately, according to extensive research by the Environmental Working Group, 3 out of 4 homes in America have harmful contaminants right in its tap water.
That's why we are thrilled to be working with AquaTrue. AquaTrue purifiers use a 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process, and their countertop purifiers work with no installation or plumbing. It removes 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters and is specifically designed to combat chemicals like PFAS in your water supply. And they have water purifiers to fit every type of home, from installation-free countertop purifiers to higher capacity under-sink options. They even have a Wi-Fi connected purifier and mineral boost options.
And its proprietary purification technology is independently tested by IAPMO to NSF and ANSI standards to remove over 80 of the most harmful contaminants, including chlorine, fluoride, arsenic, PFAS known as forever chemicals, nitrate, and many more. I can truly taste the difference when I compare it with my old water filter. AquaTrue saves you money also. Just one set of filters from their classic purifier makes the equivalent of 4,500 bottles of water. That's less than 3 cents a bottle. Plus, you'll save the environment from tons of plastic waste.
AquaTrue comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee and even makes a great gift. And today, Money Pit listeners can receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier. Just go to AquaTrue.com. That's AquaTrue.com and enter code MONEYPIT at checkout. That's 20% off any AquaTrue water purifier when you go to AquaTrue.com and use promo code MONEYPIT, MONEYPIT.
Well, there's a missing element in most American kitchens. And no, it's not a $7,500 range or a 4-acre refrigerator. It's simply good lighting. And a well-lit kitchen, guys, begins with under-cabinet task lighting. Now, these hidden fixtures, which are fairly easy to add to upper wall cabinets, provide the countertop with plenty of bright white light, which is going to make it easier for everything that you're doing in there, from dicing veggies to reading recipes. I mean, you're just going to find that you're doing much better work in the kitchen when you have the right lighting. Now, you can also connect these fixtures to a dimmer switch that gives you the option to have some dramatic accent lighting or even a nightlight for your midnight snackers out there.
Now, if you want to forego the electrical connection completely, you can consider attaching lights that can be plugged into an existing wall outlet, or you can consider battery-operated lights that can be attached in place. I love this option because a lot of the new LED versions are super bright. They use a tiny bit of electricity, and they can do a really good job, especially if you want to avoid the hard wiring.
All right, we've got Arthur in Tennessee on the line. He's dealing with a painting problem. What happened?
Not much. I'm working on a building in old downtown Johnson City, building the 1890s, and
fantastic.
Trying to strip some brick.
Okay.
I've stripped part of the brick that was done in the 1950s and had good success, but this is older brick, and I'm not even sure. I think it was made on site, and it's solid and everything, but I wondered what kind of modern options were out there for getting paint off of brick.
What did you use to get the paint off of the 1950s brick?
I used a product called Peel Away, and it worked great.
Okay. And did you try the same product on the older brick?
I'm afraid to use it because it's got a rougher finish.
Well, that means you're going to have more binding of the paint to the surface. But what I would do is I would try it in an area that was perhaps a bit less conspicuous, you know, like not at eye level, maybe down towards the bottom, or if there's any other area that you really don't care as much about. If you had good success with that particular product, I don't see any reason not to continue with it, at least to see what happens. Is this a product that is environmentally friendly, or do you find that it's pretty caustic?
It says it's biodegradable and a water-based product, but, you know, you do wear gloves and wear long sleeves, but it's amazing on how it works. I've had people come by and say, well, why aren't you using sandblasting or dry ice? And I didn't know if that is an option. Or
well, here's why you definitely can't use sandblasting, because those old bricks will be damaged by that process. And,
okay.
And it, you know, it's costly as well. So I would tell you, if the product that you're using is working well, I see no reason not to keep working with that. And I'm not really familiar with dry ice, but I can't imagine that that's very easy to use. Certainly, it's very difficult to handle.
Well, I don't see it being
potentially dangerous as well.
Paint very well.
Yeah, I agree. I'd stick with what you're working on. If you got concerns about it, I would definitely try an inconspicuous area, whether that's the back of the building or the bottom of the building, you know, someplace that you don't care about as much. We always give that advice when you're using a product like this.
and then just go on from there.
Okay. Hey, I really appreciate it, and I love your guys' show.
Well, thanks, Art. Good luck with that project, and congratulations. It sounds like it's going to be a really beautiful building when you're done.
Now we've got Louise on the line, who's got some mystery stains on a mailbox. What's going on?
Okay, I have a brick mailbox, and it seems to have salt deposits leaking through the outside of it.
Is it in the way of a lawn sprinkler by any chance?
No, it isn't.
Because often what happens if it gets groundwater splashed on it, and that can happen if you have sprinklers and wells, a lot of mineral salts in there that will dry and basically adhere to the outside. You know, what's happening here is you are seeing some sort of mineral deposits, and you're going to have to clean it. And the best way to clean it, believe it or not, is to mix up a vinegar and water solution, because vinegar melts the salts.
Wow.
So you can, you know, mix them up in a bucket, splash it down, you know, with a nice soft bristle brush, scrub it, and that should make those disappear. They may come back. But the other thing that you could think about doing, once it gets nice and dry and clean, is to apply a masonry sealer to it. And if you use a silicone-based masonry sealer, you want to get one that's vapor permeable so it doesn't trap the water underneath the sealer surface and still lets it breathe and stops it from cracking and chipping. But that should slow down the showing up of any additional salt stains.
Well, thank you so much. I'll do that.
All right, Louise, thanks so much for calling us at 888-MONEY-PIT.
Darren in Virginia, you've got the Money Pit. How can we help you today?
Yeah, so I'm trying to convert my toilet from regular water in the house to a 265-gallon rain barrel outside. So piping it in, underneath my house I have the CPVC, the smaller stuff. So what I was wondering is, do I have to filter that water? And if I pump it in there, what is the max PSI that I should use?
Are you putting a pump on it?
I'm gonna have a solar pump on it.
All right. So first of all, no, you don't have to filter toilet water because it's wastewater. It's gray water, so it can go straight in. Secondly, how much pressure do you need? Well, I guess that's really going to depend on the toilet, but I would think, you know, most water pressure in a house is going to be anywhere between 50 and 70 pounds. So that's probably what your toilet's used to working with. And thirdly, you want to make sure, I know it's a great thing that you're doing trying to use rainwater for all this, but let's not forget the obvious. Make sure your toilet itself is efficient. You know, the toilets today can use as little as about 1.3 gallons of water per flush. So if you have an older toilet, you might want to upgrade it so you need even less water for the flushing mechanism.
All right. So that's something to think about also.
What other green upgrades are you making to the house?
This actually all started with I put in a drinking system for my pigs.
Okay. Oh, you got a farm there?
I have a farm. I have a small farm in Damascus, Virginia, and we piped in the stalls drinking nipples for the pigs because they kept spilling all their water. So now they are totally self-sufficient. They have a solar-powered pump at 40 PSI going to these nipples, and it's coming off of their roof into a rain barrel that feeds it.
Wow, so this is a natural extension of that, and if it's good enough for the pigs, I guess it's going to be good enough for your home plumbing system as well.
Yeah, I definitely want to try to do as much as I can with Mother Nature before I have to depend on somebody else.
All right, well, it makes a lot of sense, Darren. Good luck with that project. Thanks so much for calling us at 888-MONEY-PIT.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, with U.S. home prices still rising, it can be very tempting to look for a good deal by buying a home that's been foreclosed. Now, it's not a bad way to get a potential price break, but there are lots of pros and cons that you've got to consider before you take that plunge. Now, here's some pros. You've got a lower cost, and I mean, that's really the biggest advantage of buying a home in a foreclosure situation is the price, because they're being sold under duress. The foreclosed upon homes are typically cheaper than comparable homes in the same area. Secondly, you're going to have motivated sellers. Now, the lenders don't want to own foreclosed properties and are looking for a way to move them quickly. And some lenders will actually beautify the property or even make some repairs to get it to sell. And there's really a good chance for you to build some equity here. If you're buying a cheaper home that needs renovation, you've got a chance to increase your equity considerably when you fix it up. Products like the FHA 203K mortgage can really help you. Now, this mortgage offers enough money to buy the house and then also rehab that property.
Ah, yes, but it's not all sunny days and roses. There are some cons. First of all, the properties are almost always sold as is. If you buy a home out of foreclosure, it means that you get the house warts and all. And some foreclosed homes have severe structural issues or code violations that can cost you a lot of money to fix. Keep in mind that homeowners that are being evicted may have either abused the home or certainly have not had the money to pay for needed repairs. Also, prices are rising. While you still can get a substantial discount when you buy a foreclosed property, the discount situation is shrinking. If you look at the prices that are fetched on auction.com, they sold more than 50,000 foreclosed and bank-owned properties in 2019. It reached a new high that year, and the prices are still going up. And finally, the home may never actually go up for sale. If you've got your eye on a house, you're thinking, great, it's in foreclosure, I'm going to wait till it goes on sale and buy it. Keep in mind, it could take months or even years for that to happen, if it ever does. Most states give homeowners many, many opportunities, which they should, to catch back up on their mortgages. But I think if you can adjust your strategy, if you have the patience, the time, and the expectations accordingly, buying a foreclosed home can still be a pretty good deal. If you want more tips, we've got a great post about just that. It's simply titled, Is It Bad to Buy a Foreclosed Home? And that's on MoneyPit.com.
Kay in Arkansas is on the line and needs some help changing a wall surface. What's going on, Kay?
Well, it is a sturdy home, cinder block, probably just that thick, but it has been bricked on the outside. But the inside, I would just like something a little more pleasant to look at.
Okay, that makes sense. So are we talking about a basement here?
No, this is an above ground. It was a cabin on a lake property.
So you need a paint that can cover the masonry block walls.
Well, a paint or a stucco or something that gives it a different texture than a cinder block look.
Okay, the process of coating the interior walls isn't as much stucco as it is plastering. So what has to happen is that wall surface has to be covered with a layer of plaster, much in the same way they used to build plaster walls, you know, many, many years ago in say, the 30s or the 40s. In fact, in the late 40s, they used to plaster right over drywall, and that was one of the best wall constructions ever. So those are the options that you have to choose from. Doing the plaster is probably not the job you want to do as your first DIY project. But if you work with a plastering company, somebody who does this every day, they would have the skills to make the plaster look nice and smooth and have an attractive surface without really taking up much space in terms of, you know, it getting too thick.
Right, right. Well, that's strange. I have plaster walls on my house at home.
Oh, well, maybe they're going to follow you to the new house.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, good luck with that project. Thanks so much for calling us at 888-MONEY-PIT.
Well, if you'd like your home to be more energy efficient, one of the first things that you need to do is stop wasting the energy you already have, and insulation is the key to doing just that. Now, roughly 40% of the average home's energy usage is attributed to heating and cooling. So anything that you can do to lower the amount of energy your HVAC system uses is going to help you lower those costs. Insulation is your home's best defense against high heating and cooling costs, and it's going to keep heat from escaping your home, but it can also seal air leaks to make sure that your HVAC system is not wasting energy by pumping air outside.
Now, when choosing insulation, you got a few options. Fiberglass in the blanket form is, or the loose form, has been the standard insulation material for years, and with the proper protection, you can definitely install fiberglass insulation yourself. The loose fill or cellulose insulation is made from recycled materials, making it very environmentally friendly as an option, but that has to be installed by a pro.
Yeah, and spray foam is the most modern type of insulation, and as the name suggests, it's sprayed onto the walls where it then rapidly expands to fill every single nook and cranny, and spray foam isn't going to sag or slide down over time like other insulation materials, and it can actually improve a home's air quality by reducing outdoor allergens or pollutants that could come in.
Now, we've had a very good experience with spray foam insulation in our 130-plus-year-old house. We applied it to the backside of the attic rafters and the attic gable walls, and all of the box beam, like that's where the house hits the foundation, all the way around. And I tell you what, it was an amazing improvement in the space. And this summer, when it got to be, you know, 100-plus degrees out, I had a number of occasions to go up in the attic where it was like a pleasant, like, I'd say 75. I mean, it never never got super hot up there because it's just so well insulated. So we really like spray foam, but it has to be applied by a pro, because basically when it's applied, there's a special truck that comes that mixes two parts together, kind of like a part A and a part B, and then it's sprayed. And the other thing that spray foam gives you is it expands at about 100-to-1 ratio, so that when it's put on and expands, it seals every nook and cranny, which is so important because that helps stop all the air leakage that also contributes hugely to your energy loss. So those are your options, and now's a great time for you to look into them.
Heading over to Illinois, Gail's got an issue with airflow at the roof line. What's going on?
Well, my home is a pole barn constructed home, 3 years old, all metal. I'm 4 feet up off the ground, and my heating duct and air conditioning, it's all in the ceiling, and I have high ceilings, vaulted ceilings, and I'm having trouble with settlement. It's settling, as far as I'm concerned, way too much, and I don't know if there's in the tape that from between the duct tape that there, or not the duct tape, but the tape is
The drywall tape, yeah. So you're getting some cracking and some movement in that ceiling area, Gail?
Oh, yeah. I know I've got movement in the house because there's, you know, it's all open, and right. I know there's not walls. The whole thing's mm-hmm. in place. So, yep. Therefore, I'm going to get some. But this one that concerns me is in the back, because when my son's in construction, and he said, well, you don't have it vented out. It could be a damp problem up there. I had my contractor come out today and take a look at it, and there's no dampness in, because they spray with some kind of a foam that adheres to the floor, I mean, up on the ceiling and around the sides, and it seals it in. And my son was concerned that he says, well, where's the air vent? I said, well, I guess we don't have one.
Okay, so let me give you some background information on this type of an application. So it sounds like your home has been insulated with spray foam. It's an excellent product. In fact, I have it in my own house. And when you use a spray foam application, you do not vent the attic. You only vent the attic if you're using a bad insulation like fiberglass or cellulose or mineral wool. In those cases, you need to vent the attic because it carts moisture out. When you use spray foam, your attic is not an unconditioned attic. It's become a conditioned attic. And so in that case, you do not vent it. I don't think your problem is lack of ventilation. In fact, I'm sure of that with the spray foam house. I think what you're describing to me is normal expansion and contraction in a newer home. Those types of situations where the drywall tape loosens up and cracks and pulls away, pretty typical in that particular type of scenario. Now, the repair on this has to be done in such a way that you're not just sort of putting back what's there. You need to pull off the loose tape, all of it, cut it away, and then you're going to gently sand that area, and then you're going to apply a type of drywall tape that's perforated and made of fiberglass. It looks like netting, and it's tacky. So you can basically stick it on across the crack, and then you put three coats of spackle over that. And what that tends to do is bridge the gap across that seam much better than just paper tape would, and hopefully stop the crack from reforming. So you can't just try to re-spackle what's there. It'll just keep showing through again and again and again. You need to take off the loose tape and replace it with the perforated tape, and then refinish it. Prime it, paint it, and you're done.
Remember, you can always post your question to MoneyPit.com, just like Ed from New Jersey did. Now, Ed writes, I want to have a storm door and an exterior door combination installed. What product information can you give me?
Well, first of all, Ed, you don't really need a storm door anymore. I mean, the exterior doors today are so much more energy efficient than they ever used to be that they simply don't require a quote-unquote storm door in order to keep the door sealed. What you could use is a screen door for sure, but you definitely don't need a storm door. In terms of exterior doors, I would recommend any of the fiberglass exterior doors because they are more energy efficient than the wood doors. They're about 5 times more energy efficient. And then what I would do is I would select a very attractive full height screen door to go in front of it. Yes, you'll need to leave the screen in year round, but heck, why not? I mean, if you're creative, you could figure out a way to take it off in the off season, but I don't really think you have to, and I think that that combination is exactly what you're going to need, but you don't need a storm door to keep it airtight. And also, if you have a storm door, what will happen, especially if you have glass panels on that exterior door, that storm door, but when it gets hot from the sun hitting it, you get the greenhouse effect, and it raises the temperature so much that it will literally melt some of that vinyl trim around the door, and sometimes it can make your handle so hot that if you grab it from the other side, you could burn your hand.
Geez, Louise. Well, I hope that helps you out, Ed. You know, there's so many beautiful door choices out there. You're bound to find something that works beautifully for your type of home.
Well, when temperatures drop, mice, rats, and other rodents love to make their way into your cozy home for relief from the chill. Leslie has tips to keep them from doing just that in today's edition of Leslie's Last Word. Leslie?
Yeah, you know, it's not as easy as hanging a no vacancy sign, but you can make some changes that'll keep mice and critters moving on and away from your house and then searching out that next warm haven, which hopefully is still not your house. Now, mice can squeeze through spaces smaller than a nickel, so you've got to seal any potential entrances to your home with sheet metal, steel wool, or cement. Those expandable foam insulations, they can be gnawed through, so if you take that route, you want to make sure you add some steel wool to the mix so that they can't chew through it. And think about your pets, guys. Your dog and your cat, they're not the only animal that's going to come running at the smell of pet food. Wet or dry, it's definitely enticing to rodents, too. I mean, so enticing that they'll chew through heavy-duty food bags for a bite. So you want to make sure you keep dry pet food in sealed metal canisters and rinse out pet food bowls before heading to bed every single night. Go ahead and give your kitchen counters and tables a nice swipe clean every evening. This way you get rid of crumbs and anything that could seem like an outdoor animal's treat. And while it doesn't seem to help their IQ, critters like newspapers and magazines as much as we do. So get rid of stacks of papers and cardboard that mice and rodents can turn into really nice nesting sites. I mean, it's a lot of stuff, but if you keep up these sort of daily routine things, it's definitely going to go a long way to keep those rodents out. So go on, if you want some more advice, to moneypit.com. There you can find some more solutions for all of the areas of your home, inside and out.
This is the Money Pit Home Improvement Show. Coming up next time on the program, if you've ever had a major storm hit your house, you know that a home which is generally safe and sound and secure can pretty much quickly turn into a leaking mess. That's why after the storm passes, it's really important to give your house a very careful inspection. We'll explain what needs to be looked at on the next edition of the Money Pit. I'm Tom Kreitler.
And I'm Leslie Segretti.
Remember, you can do it yourself,
but you don't have to do it alone. We'll